The following reading is brought to you by the Illinois Radio Reader. Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Thursday, June 5th, 2025. We will begin today's reading on the front page with a State of Illinois story headlined, Energy Reform Falls Flat, Confluence of Factors Doomed Overhaul. By Andrew Adams. Springfield. Heading into the end of the legislative session, consumer advocates, renewable energy industry groups, and environmental advocates were hopeful about a bill that would have overhauled Illinois' energy industry. It would have been the largest energy reform in years, touching almost every part of the state's electricity sector. Some said it would have been as significant as the 2021 Climate and Equitable Jobs Act, the law that requires fossil fuel burning power plants to shutter by 2045. But lawmakers declined to take up the bill, kicking the can down the line on energy reform for the second time this year, after initially punting on the issue during the January lame duck session. It was a confluence of factors, Christine Nannicelli, a Sierra Club organizer and longtime environmental advocate, told Capital News Illinois. To a certain extent, it was a product of running out of time. Lawmakers had a fairly large to-do list going into the final day of the legislative session, including approving the multiple bills that make up the state's annual budget, and a large reform package dealing with public transit in northern Illinois. That transit legislation was also a high priority for environmental groups and labor organizations, both of which were central to the fight over energy reform. In addition to environmentalists and labor, the bill was being negotiated by representatives of the governor's office, major utilities, and representatives of the renewable energy industry. The push for an energy reform package grew out of a growing sense of concern that the state won't be able to meet its ambitious climate goals. The rise of power-hungry data centers has placed significant demands on the electric grid at a time when the supply of electricity is stagnant or falling. This situation has already led to higher prices. This month, prices on residential electric bills are increasing by an average of $10.60 per month for Commonwealth Edison customers in northern Illinois and by $45 per month for Ameren Illinois customers downstate. While lawmakers couldn't do anything to stop those increases, the prospect of prices staying high for longer has frustrated some advocates. We're going to lick our wounds, Anna Markowski, who works on Midwestern issues for the National Resource Defense Council, said in an interview. Signals that negotiations were heating up, and possibly breaking down, came 2 weeks before the session ended on Saturday. A proposal from environmental groups to impose new costs on data centers drew fierce public criticism. A letter urging Governor J.B. Pritzker to oppose the proposal was released by a coalition of interest groups, including the AFL-CIO, Climate Jobs Illinois, Illinois Manufacturers Association, and Constellation Energy, the last of which operates all the state's commercial nuclear power plants. A similar letter was signed by several economic development officials from around the state. The provision, which would have required data centers and other large electric customers to fund new energy development to offset their demand, was dropped from the bill shortly after. While the data center provision drew the most public controversy, Other parts of the bill were being negotiated until the last minute, reflecting a lack of consensus among activists, industry groups, and other stakeholders. The bill was also set to outline a battery storage incentive program similar to how the state incentives solar energy. Advocates for the would-be program said it would spur historic levels of private sector investment in renewable energy. The bill would have required 6 gigawatts of energy storage developments over the next decade, with half by 2030. This is in line with recommendations from an Illinois Commerce Commission report that lawmakers commissioned earlier this year in anticipation of this bill and in line with an analysis done by the Union of Concerned Scientists last year. Nannicelli said this provision was opposed by some labor organizations, contributing to the demise of the bill. As of Saturday afternoon, the bill drew overall opposition from at least one union, although several others indicated via witness slips that they were neutral on the bill. These are critical issues to get right for consumers and working families that shouldn't be forced by a deadline, Joe Duffy, executive director of the labor-affiliated group Climate Jobs Illinois, said in a statement. We look forward to continuing conversations over the summer to take the time needed to get it right. That program also drew serious concerns from some industrial groups. The Illinois Manufacturers Association worried the rate increases to pay for the battery program would have cost businesses too much. An estimate from the American Petroleum Institute, who represents businesses that operate refineries, pegged the cost of the program over the next 11 years at about $9 billion. My main argument at the macro level is that it's very expensive for very little return, Jim Watson, who handles API's efforts in Illinois, said Saturday, and it does little to address capacity issues. An analysis from the Solar Energy Industry Association, a solar trade group, found the savings from a battery storage program would outweigh the costs, saving consumers money in the long run. A solar industry insider said lawmakers will stay at the table to reduce energy prices as federal support is incredibly unlikely under the current political climate. Unfortunately, Illinois' spring legislative session ended without a lasting solution to the continued and unprecedented energy cost increases that are taking money out of families' wallets, Leslie McCain, head of the Illinois Solar Energy and Storage Association, said in a statement. While this was a disappointing conclusion to the session, we have every reason to believe leaders in Springfield remain committed to moving Illinois' clean energy transition forward. Several other provisions of the bill drew significant attention as the pitch made its rounds in Springfield. One such aspect of the bill would have outlined an integrated resource plan process for the Illinois Commerce Commission. This would have been a major shift at the ICC, giving the regulatory agency more authority over the state's electric grid and more ability to alter the emissions reduction goals of the state. Since the passage of CEJA in 2021, the ICC has become a primary enforcer of the state's climate goals. But like other elements of the plan, it faced pushback from business groups. The Manufacturers Association was concerned that lawmakers would be ceding too much authority to state regulators. While the bill contained several other provisions, Another major issue on the table was lifting the state's long-standing moratorium on new nuclear power developments. 2 years ago, the state loosened restrictions, allowing for the development of small nuclear reactors, the type that has only become possible in recent years, thanks to technological breakthroughs. Those remain in the early stages of commercial development. Ending the nuclear moratorium for large nuclear reactors was one of the least controversial issues in the bill. While some environmentalists were opposed, others did not feel strongly about it. Business groups were broadly in favor of it. Like other aspects of the bill, it may return in a future legislative session. But for a broader reform package, it's back to the drawing board. Environmental and consumer advocates, union organizers, utilities, and energy companies all indicated that negotiations would continue into the summer, and that there is, broadly, a desire from lawmakers to move forward in some way to lower energy prices raised by data centers' demand. But what that could be, and when it might happen, is now up in the air. If you kick the can down the road, even a month, things could have pretty significant impact, Nannicelli said. We need to make a clear decision. Who's going to pay for these costs of unprecedented load growth that's coming, in large part, from data centers? And next, there is another State of Illinois story headlined, Native American School Mascot Ban Stalls, by Bridget Fox. Springfield. Illinois' legislative session concluded without passage of a Native American K-12 school mascot ban, but another issue sought by Natives will make its way to the governor. Despite desire from Native Americans in Illinois, the ban on Native imagery for mascots in K-12 schools stalled in the Senate after it made its way out of the House. House Bills 1237's Senate sponsor, Senator Susie Glowiak Hilton, Democrat of Western Springs, said after the bill missed a deadline earlier this session, she was still gathering a consensus from other legislators. But she said many of the concerns she heard about the measure stemmed from the costs associated with schools changing mascots. We will continue conversations about it and see what we can do with helping them pass it, Glowiak Hilton said when the bill missed its mid-May deadline. Native American advocates told Capital News Illinois earlier this year about the importance of improving Native imagery. Our identity has been frozen in time, and it's going to stay frozen in time as long as we're portrayed as mascots and things of the past, said Matt Baudet, a citizen of the Montauk Tribe of Indians, who was in Springfield to advocate for the bill's passage. Andrew Johnson, a citizen of the Cherokee Nation and executive director of the Native American Chamber of Commerce of Illinois, said how Natives are often portrayed as mascots in school logos has a detrimental effect of costuming. It really is not a sense of honor there, he said. It is not a sense of history. In fact, it's a perversion of history to think that these mascots are maintaining any kind of that memory of Native people. Ho-Chunk Nation Conserving Land in Illinois. A separate bill related to Native interests did make it through both houses and awaits the governor's signature. House Bill 1605, originally sponsored by Representative Maurice West, Democrat of Rockford, would amend existing law so tribal nations can join land conservation agreements with landowners. As land conservators, a tribal nation could maintain the land and have control over what happens to it. Originally, only nonprofits, the state or federal agencies, could join land conservation agreements with landowners. The Joe Davies Conservation Foundation, a nonprofit in Joe Davies County, brought the idea of land conservation forward to the Ho-Chunk Nation, which is inside Wisconsin. The Ho-Chunk Nation was not available for comment. The foundation owns land in the county that holds a cultural site significant to the Ho-Chunk Nation. The nonprofit owns and maintains multiple sites that are important to different tribal nations. The foundation's executive director, Steve Barg, along with a former employee, said they were originally interested in giving the land to the Ho-Chunk, but they said the nation found the idea impractical. They're not going to get in a car every week and drive down 4 hours to care for these places, Barg said. That's just not feasible for them. There were also reportedly concerns that Illinoisans would not be receptive to the nation owning land there, akin to some worries people had about the Prairie Band Potawatomi Nation. The Ho-Chunk, like the Prairie Band Potawatomi, own casinos. However, neither nation has expressed any desire to open a casino in Illinois. A conservation agreement offered a clearer path of collaboration, but the groups needed a law change to specifically allow tribal nations to execute one. Barg said the Ho-Chunk and the Joe Davies Conservation Foundation have been working together for 12 years. The groups apparently wanted to go forward with a land conservation easement because, if the foundation didn't exist one day, any provisions agreed to under the agreement would still have to be honored. It differentiates the agreement from a private contract they could have entered instead. We want to make sure that the purposes of protecting this land for conservation outlasts our own organization, Barg said. If our own organization were ever to merge with another organization or cease to exist, those conservation easements held on our land by other entities would still protect the mission under which we saw that these lands were preserved. Next up is a local story entitled, Chicago Man Granted Pre-Trial Release, by Drew Zimmerman. Bloomington. A Chicago man was granted pre-trial release in McLean County after police said he was found with a revolver. Jamel M. Smalling, 34, is charged with unlawful possession of a firearm by a felon, a Class X felony, aggravated unlawful possession of a weapon by a felon, a Class 2 felony, and unlawful possession of a weapon by a felon, a Class 3 felony, according to court records. Smalling made his first appearance in McLean County Court Monday when Judge Amy McFarland heard arguments on whether he should be held in jail before the case goes to trial. Assistant State's Attorney David Fitt filed a petition to detain the defendant, arguing Smalling's release would pose a danger to the community that couldn't be mitigated by other measures. According to the probable cause statement, McLean County Sheriff's deputies pulled over a black Nissan on Monday for a vehicle code violation. Smalling was a backseat passenger. Police searched the vehicle and found cannabis and a revolver in the back seat, the prosecutor said. Smalling told police a co-worker gave him the gun to keep him safe at his job in Chicago. When Fitt listed Smalling's prior offenses, Assistant Public Defender Craig Queen noted, although Smalling had been the plaintiff in armed robbery cases out of Cook County, He was never convicted of a charge of armed robbery with a firearm. McFarland denied the state's petition to detain, but she ordered Smalling to adhere to Illinois' pretrial conditions, attend all of his hearings in McLean County, and avoid firearms and ammunition. An arraignment is scheduled for June 20th. The next local story is headlined, Lee Cyber Attack Affected Employees' Data. Company notifying those affected by February breach. By Gretchen Teske. Lee Enterprises, the parent company of the Pantograph, has disclosed that a February cyber attack affected the data of nearly 40,000 people. The company sent an email to employees Wednesday saying it had completed its investigation into the February 3rd breach and that some employees may have had their personal information compromised. A filing in the Maine Attorney General's office this week showed 39,779 people were affected in total. In an email, a representative for Lee Enterprises acknowledged the breach and said the company has taken significant steps to further enhance our security to help ensure that a similar situation does not occur again in the future. The internal email to employees noted the company had completed its investigation into the data impact of the recent breach and is in the process of notifying those whose personal information was affected. Notification letters were sent by U.S. mail on June 3rd and will provide affected employees with details on what specific information of theirs was affected. Those employees are being offered identity theft protection. The notification letter, posted by the Maine Attorney General's office, also lays out other steps impacted employees can take. In February, the company announced a cybersecurity event, Disrupted Systems and Networks within the Lee Enterprises Network, which led to publishing and delivery disruptions for readers of the Pantograph and others. The notification letter states the information was accessed on February 1, 2025, and the breach was discovered February 3rd. CEO Kevin Mowbray previously said the focus was on determining what information was affected and that law enforcement had been notified. Mowbray at the time said he could not speculate on details because the incident was under investigation, and we will not be able to share information that could compromise our investigation or any investigation by law enforcement. He added that the company was working to identify additional steps we can take to help prevent something like this from happening again. In its second quarter earnings report released in early May, Lee Enterprises acknowledged $2 million in expenses related to recovering from the cybersecurity attack. We incurred $2 million in restoration costs in the quarter related to the cyber incident, and second quarter advertising revenue was impacted as our product portfolio was limited for a period of time, said Mowbray in a press release announcing the results. On the subscription side, our normal process for activating new digital subscribers was hampered, significantly impacting units in the quarter. I'm proud of how our team navigated the challenges as we are now recovered from the cyber incident and focused on executing our strategy. Lee Enterprises own newspapers across 24 states, along with marketing services, digital publications, and weekly and specialty publications. Besides the Pantograph, Its Central Illinois publications include the Herald and Review, Journal Gazette, and Times Courier, and the Woodford County Journal. And the next local item is entitled, Woman from Normal Accused of Selling Cocaine, by Caitlin Klepek. Bloomington. A woman from Normal has been released from McLean County custody after authorities said she sold and possessed cocaine. Pasha M. Davis, 53, is charged with 2 counts of unlawful possession of a controlled substance with intent to deliver, involving 1 to 15 grams of cocaine, Class 1 felonies. 1 count of unlawful possession of a Schedule 3 narcotic with intent to deliver, involving less than 1 gram of cocaine, a Class 2 felony. 2 counts of unlawful delivery of a controlled substance with 1 to 15 grams of cocaine, Class 1 felonies. The defendant appeared in custody Tuesday afternoon before Judge William Yoder. Assistant State's Attorney David Fitt noted these offenses were not detention eligible and the state did not file a petition to detain. Assistant Public Defender Mackenzie Frizzle stipulated to probable cause and waived formal readings of the charges. According to charging documents, Davis is accused of committing these offenses on April 1st, April 4th, and May 6th. Yoder ordered Davis be released with the statutory conditions of release, plus 1 discretionary condition, not to possess or consume alcohol, cannabis, or controlled substances without a valid prescription. Davis will appear for arraignment on June 20th. Here are some road closure announcements compiled by Olivia Jacobs. Bloomington. The McLean County Highway Department announced 2 road closures taking place this week. In White Oak Township, Carlock Secor Road, 750 East Road, County Highway 49, between 2250 North Road and Brown Road in Woodford County, will be closed to through traffic from June 5th to June 19th for road construction, weather permitting. In Anchor Township, 1400 North Road, between State Route 9 and 3900 East Road, will be closed to through traffic starting Monday, June 9th, and continuing through Friday, June 20th, weather permitting. The closure is for box culvert replacement. Visit mcleancountyil.gov/highway or call 309-663-9445 for more information. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for June 5th. Please stay tuned.